From Troy Public Radio and the College of Communication and Fine Arts at Troy University, you are listening to Inquire. Conversations about choral music, the arts, and life. I'm Diane Orlovsky.
And I'm Scott Sexton.
On the topic of today's episode, a grief expressed, is one that kind of touches on a hard and deep idea of grief and loss. These are universal themes, Scott, and we've all experienced them.
Absolutely. We've all lost someone close to us, whether a family member or friend. I want to talk about one of my heaviest losses. As a choir director teaching young children, I lost one of my longtime students. Taught them every day for 6 years. And, you know, up until then, I never really thought about how choral music works in this process.
Right.
And there was a huge hole for us. He was a star on the soccer field.
Right.
He was a star in the choir. He was just a big shining light. So one of the hardest things for us was coming back in the rehearsal and having that empty chair.
Yeah.
And throughout this whole process, we used song and choral music to help us move on.
Right.
It eventually ended up in some performances to honor the memory of the student.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, it's really changed my outlook on how I can use choral music.
Absolutely.
To help address other losses. And today, I know we're going to speak with some composers. I'm very interested to hear the composer perspective.
Right. And, you know, I have a similar experience where choral music helped me through the process of grief and loss. And when I was conducting, I was also leaving in the afternoon to go caregive for my father. And there were many long, quiet hours of contemplation while this was going on. And then I was amazed at during the morning time, during the day, I would be working with the choir on music and found it so cathartic. I remember vividly one experience where I couldn't control the fact that tears were just streaming down my face. This was just in a regular rehearsal. I actually had to step back, and my graduate assistant had to come forward and finish the piece. And I realized that the process during the rehearsal was helping me heavy lift and work through some of that grief. You know, it's profound. What a gift when we can share that mystic union of singer and song. Grief no longer just observed, grief shared and endured and gloriously expressed. This is Inquire. Today we are talking with two composers about the intersection of choral music and the very human experience of grief and loss. Our first guest, Dr. Terry Johnson, is the chair of the music department at Georgia Southern University. Johnson's career has included conducting every kind of choir, from church music to professional conducting to community organizations to teaching in public schools and universities, and his compositions are receiving acclaim both here and abroad. Welcome to Inquire, Terry.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's wonderful to talk with you.
I've wanted to ask you this about this piece, and just to let you talk about the background of the piece.
Well, a couple of years ago, maybe now, I guess 4 years ago, I had an unusual thing happening that happens to people at my age, which was I had two very close friends, both of whose spouses were on their deathbeds. They were very ill. And as we all do, you know, I would reach out to those people from time to time and ask about them and, you know, try to be part of the community of support that they had as they walked through the Valley of the Shadow. One of them told me that he had found a very meaningful poem, and he read that poem to me. It's by Samuel Rutherford, who was a Presbyterian minister of the 17th century. And in it, he expressed these words that you're familiar with from this piece that I thought were so beautiful. and perhaps we'll refer to the words a little bit later. I won't read them to you now. But as I contemplated that text, I spoke with the other friend. And he and his wife were both very close friends of mine. I wrote music for their wedding and, you know, participated in their wedding ceremony. And we'd been friends for a very long time. And I decided I didn't want to wait until pancreatic cancer took the life of Brenda Bradley, but rather I would like to write something and offer it to them as a gift while she could still hear it. So I set about writing a piece of music using the text by Samuel Rutherford.
Let me go ahead and read that text for the audience so they can refer to it as you're speaking. She is not sent away, but only sent before, like unto a star which, going out of your sight, doth not die and vanish, but shineth in another hemisphere. Ye see her not, yet she doth shine.
How can you experience those words and not be moved by them? I just think they're so reassuring and so wonderful. So I wrote this piece. It's for piano and cello and voice. The reason for the instrumentation is that Randall and Brenda Bradley have two kids, Isaac and Hannah. Hannah is a pianist and Isaac is a cellist. And of course, Randall is the endowed professor of church music at Baylor University and plays the piano himself, of course, and directs the Baylor University men's choir. And so it was originally written for men's choir, cello, and piano. I sent it to Randall in an email and just said, there's almost nothing I can do for you all right now. And I'm among the many, many people who would do anything for you, but there isn't anything. So I took some time and wrote this piece as my gift to you in hopes that Brenda could experience it with you. And it comes with no expectation of performance or anything like that. It's just a gift for you to do with as you will. Well, I sent it and within a few days heard from him that by this time Brenda was not able to be up and go to a men's choir rehearsal or concert, but that Randall and Hannah had played it and sung it as much as they could, you know, to cover the parts that needed to be covered at their home so that Brenda could experience it, and that she found it meaningful. And then after her passing a few months later, I got a text one night from a friend named Randy Edwards. He's the guy that directs an organization called Youth Q that organizes festivals for church youth choirs. And he was at Baylor where they were having one of these festivals. And part of the festival itinerary was that the Baylor Men's Choir would perform for the people visiting in the youth choir festival. And they performed this piece. And when Randy realized what was going on, he pulled out his phone and recorded it and sent it to me via text. And that's how I first heard the piece performed.
Wow.
Since then, they've managed to, you know, perform it more and made a recording of it. Although, as you know, the recording they made was during the time of COVID when they were rehearsing live, but they were having to do it at a distance from one another and wearing masks. And so the recording has a little bit of a muffled quality because of that.
Anyone who is a conductor and has, you know, worked through the pandemic with their choirs remembers those 10 feet apart days, masked performances or recordings or whatever. And that was a bit of a loss in and of itself, wasn't it?
And if you can imagine how buoying those young men were to their director during that time, and yet unable to just come up and hug him, to be close. It was grief on top of grief, and kind of lost in it is the grief of the first friend, whom you also know. His name is Terry Taylor. His wife, Laurie, was in the very last stages of a long bout with Alzheimer's disease, and he's the one who originally found this poem.
Wow. Everything kind of comes full circle. Now that we have heard the story behind Terry Johnson's composition, let's listen to Yet She Doth Shine, sung here by the Baylor University Men's Choir. This is In Choir, and I'm Diane Orlovsky. Let's get back to our conversation with Terry Johnson about grief, loss, and choral music that explores these shared moments.
As Barbara Brown Taylor says, it's one of those thin places, you know, that my emotions are very near the surface. And even now, talking with you about this 4 or 5 years later, I feel a lump in my throat. It means something to me. That music I conceived and words that I set to music were among the last pieces of music that Brenda Bradley heard, and that they meant something to her, and they were expressed to her by her family members singing in the living room. There's something so holy and beautiful about that.
Very, very much. And it's part of it, I think, is this masterful way you set text in this piece. You sort of make it come alive. And there are two places that struck me. I love how you compositionally set the word die, and I know that sounds kind of contradiction, but the way you spin one voice after another voice after another voice after another voice, you're basically giving hope after death by, for me, listening to it. And then at the very end, as they're holding a chord and they move to another chord, they move to another chord, you move between grief and hope, you know, by the chords you choose.
I really appreciate hearing that. To me, the piece has a kind of unsettled quality. It moves from key to key pretty frequently. You never do really settle in before you've moved to a different harmonic structure or a different key, and you have to settle in again. And I think that also is a picture of what grief is like. You have a day that you move through if you're grieving and you think, okay, I'm getting a handle on this. I'm able to process these feelings and thoughts. And then the next day you plummet, you know, and then the next day you bounce. And that's kind of the way grief is. And in a bigger way, that's the way this piece is.
Grief has a part to play in all of our lives. You know, it's kind of like the tether, the shared experience that we all experience, regardless of creed and culture and belief system.
We all turn to music at the crucial holy moments of our lives and find what we need there. We find energy, comfort, solace, quiet, and in the same way, it doesn't need to come to us through someone else's system. It just affects us in our own way, in our own perspective.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your schedule, Terry, to talk to us about this beautiful piece.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to talk with you.
You've been listening to our conversation with Terry Johnson about his piece, Yet She Doth Shine. This is Inquire, and we've been exploring the intersection between choral music and the very human experience of grief and loss. Our next guest, Dr. Jeffrey Ames, is a well-respected conductor, composer, and arranger who serves as the director of choral activities at Belmont University. He's in demand as a choral clinician and was the first recipient of the National ACDA James Mulholland Choral Music Fellowship. Let's listen as he shares the background, personal reflections, and compositional journey behind his piece, In Remembrance. Jeffrey, for our listeners, can you share a bit about the background of this piece, In Remembrance?
Yes, I'm happy to. My last year as a high school choir director was in 2002. And at that time, I graduated, you know, a good bunch and a great crop of high school seniors. And one of those seniors was Rebecca Potts. Mm-hmm. Now, the piece is written in memory of Rebecca, her father, and a younger sister, Anna. Mm. But what happened was I returned home from 4th of July family vacation, and my wife was still going to remain with her family in Indianapolis. I came back to do church the next morning, and a friend picked me up from the airport, and it's like, did you hear the news? I said, no, what? She says, there was a tragic accident with the Potts family, and it just tore me apart. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't believe this. And she told me what happened, that the family were on vacation in Billings, Montana, and dad, Dr. Potts, fell asleep at the wheel, and it was a tragic event. So of the seven people that were in the van, four survived, being the wife, Jane, the eldest daughter, Elizabeth, the son, Will, and Elizabeth's husband. And at the time, Elizabeth was with child. So three of the seven, you know, had perished. So I felt like I needed to do something. I'm a very religious person. And at that moment, I didn't want to talk to God because I was angry. So I just sat down and started composing. Oh. And what came to mind was the Lux Aeterna, light perpetual shine on them forever. And that's all I could get. So I basically stayed up that night till about 4 or 5 in the morning, and I got something down on paper that was a type of relief. It was it was an expression of some of the emotions that I was feeling. And from there, you know, I could close my eyes. But as I wrestled, I wrestled with what I had written for years.
Why?
And I wasn't happy with it.
Huh.
It was too sweet. During that summer, I tried to pick it up and work on it some more, and I couldn't. And I would just have to table it again. And I did this for 2.5 years.
Wow.
It wasn't until preparing for my last year in graduate school at Florida State that my mentor and major professor, Dr. Thomas, said, "Well, Jeff, I think you should write a piece." And I said, "Well, this is the time to really finish in remembrance and make it what I feel it should be." So it took a lot of soul searching. It took a lot of meditation. It took a lot of prayer for me to really dig into the recesses of my mind and my heart and have those feelings resurface again. And then I was able to deal with them. The beginning is very sweet and heavenly and promising and hopeful. But in the B section, that's when I really had to grapple with my feelings and say, "God, turn to me and be gracious, because my heart is in distress."
Right.
And the climax of the piece, "Oh God, why have you forsaken me?" That was really what I was feeling back in 2002. But I couldn't say it.
Right. Well, that's for me, having walked, we've all walked. It's what unites us, you know, paths of grief and loss. And and that part, when I would conduct this, and it tore me up every time, that the masterful way you set the, "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" But then coming out of it and acknowledging my tears linger at night, and then that, "But joy comes in the morning light." And then that beautiful, the chord that you keep saying, the word light, 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 you know.
I call that my Whitaker moment.
Let's listen to In Remembrance, conducted by Ames and performed by the ACDA Collegiate Mixed Honor Choir, that was part of a Celebration of Unity concert at the 2017 ACDA conference. This is Inquire, and I'm Diane Orlovsky. We're talking to composer Jeffrey Ames about the piece we just heard, his composition, In Remembrance. Well, I'm sure you've been told this before, but when we performed this piece, we had fairly recently lost a member of the Troy community who was a longstanding music educator, most beloved, and I had invited his family to come and to sit in the audience and had dedicated the performance of your piece to that family. And it was, you know, it's like the gift. You gave them, through us, a gift. And that gift would just keep giving every time they heard it or whatever. And that must be, as a composer, that must be a very gratifying thing, is it not?
It is very gratifying and very humbling as well. This piece has had a life, or it has a life of its own. I will receive messages from people and just strangers who have said, you know, this piece really helped me during a time that I lost a loved one, or that I was contemplating suicide, or I was in, you know, drug rehab or recovery. And this piece just, I never thought it would have the impact that it does.
That it offers hope on so many different levels beyond the original intent.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And our friend and colleague, Anton Armstrong, he said, you know, Jeff, the thing, one thing about that piece is that it goes through the stages of grief.
It does.
And I never intended or never even thought about that perspective while composing. But it makes sense. It makes sense. And he says that, he also said, the last horn cadenza after light, the light chord, is like Gabriel blowing his horn. and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like an epiphany. And again, it has a life of its own that I never anticipated it.
Let me ask you a question. You're a conductor as well as a composer. When you are conducting a piece that has great emotional significance for whatever reason, how do you have the students approach it? I know I find so much of the time the propensity is to pull in the emotion and to reveal it, you know, through the music. And then other conductors say, no, 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 you hold it in check. You let the music do the speaking for you. And you separate the emotional base out from the actual music. What are your thoughts on that?
I can't do that. There's no separation. There's no separation. With every single ensemble and every single piece of music that we do, we take time to discuss it. And then we're able to pull in both what we hope for from within our souls and what we actually experience on a daily basis, and find out how those two do intersect and how they can be applied to the music. And it's such a deeper, more relevant, it brings more relevancy to the music, and it comes alive. It does, it comes alive. And it's difficult for me to separate what the music says, however deeply emotional it is, and our human nature.
Yeah.
It's been said that there is a tether between the conductor and the choir, and the ensemble, we can say the ensemble, and the audience feels and senses and sees and hears everything that's up on stage. Because of that tether. That tether is taught between the choir or the ensemble and the conductor. And if the conductor is showing that emotion and sharing the experience with them, the audience is changed.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to talk to us, to help us understand this piece. So thank you, Jeffrey.
My pleasure. You're welcome. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Inquire, conversations about choral music, the arts, and life. In Choir is produced and edited in the studios of Troy Public Radio
by Austin Toy, Kyle Gassett, and Diane Orlovsky.
Our logo was designed by Rachel Arnold. Special thanks to the College of Communication and Fine Arts and Dean Michael Thrasher.
Please subscribe to the In Choir podcast and let others know about us. You can also leave a review in the podcast platform of your choice. It will help others find the show. We hope you join us again for more conversations about choral music, the arts, and life. This is In Choir. I'm Diane Orlovsky.
And I'm Scott Sexton.
Thank you for listening.